All right, let's go to our Zoom line here and bring in Mr. Kunal Patel from the Federal Reserve of Dallas. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, Jason. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good here. Appreciate the time today. I wanted to find out kind of the recent study you guys had with the survey and some of the information that you found down in the Permian, but also I know you've got another one coming up in about a month, so we want to be sure we give out the periods of when people can submit their information to the Dallas Federal Reserve to help them with their study. But before we get into it, just kind of that elevator pitch, you know, maybe floor 1 to 5 on what this kind of this quarterly study is, what you guys look for, and just kind of the 101, if you wouldn't mind.
Perfect. Thanks, Jason. I appreciate you inviting me on your show. And so we run a quarterly survey. It's called the Dallas Fed Energy Survey. It's a survey of roughly about 200 upstream oil and gas firms located or headquartered in our, as we call it, the 11th District of the Federal Reserve. It's Texas, parts of southern New Mexico, parts of northern Louisiana. Many of these firms operate regionally, nationally, internationally. For a second quarter survey, the data was collected from June 8th to June 16th, and we had 137 energy firms respond. 85 of those were exploration and production firms, 52 were oil field services firms. Just like Jason mentioned, we will release our third quarter survey on September 28th. The survey period will be essentially about a week or two before that. If you're a executive in our district, we invite you to come to our website and sign up to be a participant in our survey and represent your firm.
And let's talk a little bit about the study that is available right now on your website. If people would like to download the PDF, they certainly can. But we'll give those people that maybe don't have the time to sit down and read a lot of the different things. What are the bullet points, the takeaways? What are some of the things that you might want to know as a business owner? Maybe you're in business development. Maybe you happen to be on the HR side or even the chemistry side.
Certainly. So the latest survey results show in our latest quarter, you know, the robust expansion in the upstream oil and gas sector continues. We're seeing outlooks continue to improve. On the other hand, though, there is cost pressures which are continuing to escalate, you know, whether it's input costs, labor cost. There's also supply chain issues. A lot of these supply chain delays have worsened in our latest quarter. I should also mention that production continues to grow, whether it's oil or natural gas, and employment for a sixth straight quarter, employment increased. And I think last thing to mention is that uncertainty also did tick up a bit, despite the fact that oil prices are, you know, during the survey period were near $120. Executives were reporting that still their uncertainty quarter over quarter did increase a bit. We also have a section in which we ask like a new set of questions every quarter. We call them special questions. Many of these questions highlight, you know, the supply chain issues that many of these firms are facing, how long they think the supply chain issues will take to resolve. That specifically, you know, 2/3 of executives think it'll take more than 12 months. You know, what is the current availability of inputs to firms? I think the most significant shortage of inputs that was identified was steel, tubular goods. And then we have, you know, some questions around uncertainty, their outlook for production. You know, if they were looking to drill an additional well above their current plans, how long it would take, so on and so forth.
Sorry, I'm just writing down in my notes here. Okay, so here's what I've got in my notes that I've want you to elaborate on if you can. Number one, uncertainty. Number two, supply chain. Number three, steel and raw materials. Those are the buzzwords I heard. So uncertainty, first of all, the fact that you've got a comment period or a question or a look at uncertainty, boy, that speaks a lot. What can you elaborate at all on the uncertainty portion of your study?
And I'm glad you brought it up. So uncertainty generally in the oil and gas industry, when the price of oil goes up, what we've seen in our uncertainty index is that uncertainty regarding their outlook has declined. I think it's kind of natural that when the price goes up, then your revenues increase. Generally, so does your profitability. So you become a little bit more certain. So your uncertainty declines. What's a little bit unusual is in the first quarter and the second quarter this year, we saw our uncertainty index. What it does is it, you know, executives note whether their uncertainty is increased or decreased quarter over quarter. And we create an index by taking the percentage of firms reporting an increase minus the percentage of firms reporting a decrease. Positive suggests an increase in uncertainty. And what we noticed was that, you know, firms are growing, you know, more uncertain. In the second quarter, that uptick was smaller than the first quarter. And so we asked a question this time, which was, which of the following is the primary reason driving uncertainty regarding your firm's outlook? We really wanted to identify what was the primary reason. And the most selected response, 46% of respondents, was labor shortages, cost inflation, and or supply chain bottlenecks. But I should also note, though, that roughly about, 27% cited uncertainty about government regulation, and 20% said oil price volatility. And so there are also some other choices there, but that kind of elaborates more on the uncertainty aspect. When it comes to, I think you mentioned supply chain, we asked a question around how would you rate the impact of supply chain issues on your firm? 47% said it has a slightly negative impact. Another 47% said it has a significantly negative impact. So pretty much most firms are being negatively impacted by these supply chain issues. They expect it to take more than 12 months to resolve. That was selected by about 66% of respondents. And then we asked about current availability to your firm of the following inputs. Like you mentioned, I think it was steel tubular goods. 50% of executives said that there is a significant shortage of steel tubular goods currently. That includes drill pipe and casing. 39% noted shortage, 10% noted balanced, and no executives noted oversupply or significant oversupply.
Was there any comments or any on the price of it, steel or any other raw materials, anything like that? The price like out of whack or increasing out of control or anything like that?
I think that specifically was mentioned in a prior survey.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think of which one. I mean, in the first quarter, that was when there was definitely a pretty big jump in steel. So I've kind of pulled it up. And what they noted in the first quarter was there was a comment. So we have a section where executives can provide anonymous comments, and their comment within it included the largest cost increase over the last 12 months for the oil and gas industry is from tubular steel. And so I think that, you know, this data is kind of publicly available that the tubular steel prices have been increasing significantly going into the second quarter. I'd have to check what it is as of today.
Oh, no, that's okay, because I spoke to people in the construction industry and nail prices hadn't gone down, steel nails. And I talked to Justin Kringstead with the Pipeline Authority up in North Dakota, and he said all the people were complaining about steel prices still in the pipelines. And I'm like, okay, if it's still going up, then, we're still going to have some inflation happening that people need to probably be aware of. Just all I'm trying to do is keep an eye on some of these raw material economic indicators, if you will, because, you know, it has a boomerang effect. And then sometimes, and where I wanted to go next was to mergers and acquisitions and consolidations. And I'm seeing a lot of those. And when uncertainty happens, a lot of times people will just sell because that's certain. Hey, on to the next chapter, whatever we got to do. We got some rock now in our life instead of the sand or the rapids. So did your study get into anything at all with mergers, acquisitions, consolidations, or anything like that?
And so we did not ask that specific special question this quarter. I know previously we've asked something around this. Just the challenge, I can't remember, you know, which quarter it unfortunately was. You know, we kind of talked about, as you know, there are quite a few, it depends on if we're talking about oilfield services or E&P firms, there are quite a few of these firms out there. I think for a publicly listed E&P firms, there's, let's say, like 50 or so. And that's not that's not a small number.
Yeah.
And as I'm slowly trying to shift through all my, our previous surveys, I think I found it. We asked in the fourth quarter of 2020, this is a blast from the past.
Yeah.
There are about 60 publicly listed EMP firms in the US. There's been a recent wave of mergers and acquisitions. How many of these firms do you think will remain by the end of 2022? The most selected response was 37 to 48. But I should have mentioned that there were still quite a few that said above 49. Of course, at the end of this year, we'll be able to fact check what number will be there. But I wouldn't be surprised, though. There's still going to be quite a few publicly listed EMP firms. I think that there has been M&A activity, but I think there's still quite a few of them there. That's what the data would suggest regarding M&A.
Well, what's interesting to me is I keep an eye on layoffs and I keep an eye on mergers and acquisitions from a, you know, more of the global companies, because a lot of times they really, you know, they start the ball rolling of a momentum. And if you're part of that trajectory, well, you're going to be doing it too. And one way you lay off people is to make your books look better. So then you do the merger and acquisition, you know, that sort of thing. The other way is that the, you know, the layoffs come after a merger and acquisition. For example, I believe it was Whiting and Oasis. I want to say they merged into a new company called Chord. And I know that there was a couple Eastern companies that did the same thing. But anyway, that I could name any two names. You know, hey, look at this. Kraft and Cheerios merged. Actually, that's not even a real thing. But my point is that when you merge, you've got two HR firms. You've got two marketing. You've got, you know, two of everything. So layoffs are pretty common. I think this is, you know, people are pretty well aware of this, that, you know, a certain percentage of layoffs happen after a merger. And then new hires happen after that. But was there any layoff talk? Was there any new hire talk? Talk to me about the employment side as we, you know, kind of go into the fall when people are going to have kids going back to school and a whole new momentum starts, man.
I'll break it down a bit. You know, as you know, when, just like you mentioned, when there's a merger, a lot of times you end up with two of a specific department. And so many of these companies may reduce their headcount. In our latest survey, you know, the index for employment continues to be positive. That just suggests that firms, you know, again, the way we come up with our index is firms report whether they've increased, decreased, or had no change in employment compared to the prior quarter. And we take the percentage of firms reporting an increase minus the percentage of firms reporting a decrease. That gives us an index. That index is positive, suggesting that employment's increasing. However, I should note, though, when you look at the, that gives you the direction. When you look at the outright number of employees, we're at employment levels not seen since 2007. You know, employment in the oil and gas space for the upstream sector is at a historical low. And then when you break it down into like oil and gas extraction, which are EMP firms, and support activities for mining, which are EMP or oilfield services firms, I should also mention that, you know, the EMP firms are at a very low level. That's because as these firms merge, it just isn't as many people needed to, you know, monitor the production. However, on the oilfield services sides, we have seen a larger uptick in employment since the lows in 2020. That's just because you need people to drill and complete wells physically on site. There really isn't any specific comments around employment. Most of the employment comments we've had over the last 12 months have been that it's just really hard to find an additional oil and gas employee. And then on top of that, there's always a lot of comments around wage pressure, just that wages are significantly increasing. And it's just an added cost to companies.
This is one of the reasons why we bring Kunal Patel on from the Dallas Federal Reserve. Is it the 11th or 13th district?
It is the 11th district.
Okay, I believe it's, is it letter D on my dollar bill?
That is actually a good question.
All right, there's your pop quiz, folks, right there. What letter is on the dollar bill from the Dallas Federal Reserve. Anyway, but no, I'm really glad you brought up some of the different employment parts and that, because I just saw a tweet or a LinkedIn or a Facebook, or that's the only ones we're on. So I just saw a social media tweet from Governor Abbott out of Texas talking about 4,500 new jobs in the oil and gas sector. And you know, whenever I see that from a politician, automatically my first thought is, well, how many did you lose? And because that's a little sleight of hand trick that the media does and the politicians do, and they've been working hand in hand on that for a long time. One thing I like about what you guys do and some of the other more university and educational type things is you look at the other side. You bring in a balance, and so you look at the gain versus the net loss and et cetera. Now, you did bring up the merger side of things, but the good news was, as you said, that there was an increase on the supply chain, I'm sorry, the service side, which was my next question, which is technology. That as I'm seeing, you know, starting to see more automation come to the oil and gas sector, whether it be via, you know, the walking rigs or, you know, in the office or whatever. What is there any sort of automation concerns or positivities? Where are we at with the technology side of things, either from an innovation side or from a job reduction side?
And so the most important thing is that with more and more innovation, we've seen less and less of a need for as many employees. I think on the oilfield services side, companies are able to drill and complete wells faster today than they did during, you know, prior 2017 to 2019 or 2012 to 2014. I don't have a number straight off the top of my head, but I think that like if you don't adjust it for lateral length, you know, many of these wells are being drilled 20-30% faster, and then maybe they're completed 20-30% faster, which then means you may need 20-30% less employees because of that. That's the efficiency. Now, the technology piece could also be remote monitoring. I think that maybe 10, 20 years ago, you used to have people that would drive from production site to production site to monitor the production, whereas now you could get it connected to a cell signal and add a couple of cameras. And from there, you can remote monitor many of these production sites. And so maybe you don't need as many people driving around you can just do remote monitoring. And then when it comes to production, you know, shale is in, you know, if you think of shale starting, you know, I don't know, 2006, 2008, as we know more and more about shale, you may need less and less people to monitor or evaluate the production. So you may need less engineers, so on and so forth. And so maybe that's why we've had less employment at EMP firms, because you just need less engineers to, or you may give more production monitoring to a single engineer. And so this is just the role of technology, in that the industry has evolved where it may not need as many employees to do the same amount of work. On the flip side, though, I think that you've probably read in many places that it's also been a challenge to find additional employees. I think a lot of that is more in the field because these are in remote locations. I think what's commonly cited is there's been significant volatility in the oil and gas space, which then makes it a little bit more challenging as a longer term, you know, steady career. And so the industry has just gone through the challenges of trying to increase employment where there may be challenges finding additional employees.
So the salacious journalist in me, the I want to go viral with a headline in me, says that, you know, the takeaway is historic job loss historic since 2007, whatever that quote was you said from job levels from 2007, dang it, I can't remember. I didn't write it down, but I went, oh, that's salacious and juicy there. But that would take away from everything that we've talked about over the last 20 minutes, so I'm not going to do that. What was your takeaway from this study? What do you think people should take away from it? You know, like, what would the headline be in your world from, you know, this latest study, I guess?
I think the main thing would be that we're currently seeing activity continue to increase. I think that firms are doing what they can to increase production. There are, of course, challenges around whether some of it's cost and then some of it's resource-based. Cost is just the costs are increasing at a very strong pace. And then on a resource basis, whether it's personnel or it's steel or it's equipment, these are all short in supply. At the same time, you know, companies are, you know, the executives are, you know, they are becoming more optimistic, although generally they have been generally pretty optimistic, but the higher prices do allow for more optimism. But there's still also uncertain. Uncertainty could be because of price volatility. It could be due, it could be a regulatory aspect. There's a variety of reasons that are cited in the anonymous comments of why they're uncertain. I think that there still is a lot of volatility. I think if you look at the price of oil today, it's, I think it's around $88 per barrel for WTI. This compares to the last survey period in which it was 120, right? So this is a lot of volatility, and we essentially just have to see how the rest of the year shapes out. I think it's been a quite a volatile year for energy since the start of this year. And so we'll just have to see how the rest of the year shapes out.
People are still working their tail off, it sounds like.
Without a doubt. I think that we, of course, have an index on our employee hours, and it continues to increase, which suggests that employees, if you're employed, you're working long hours.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there's less employees, but there's still plenty of work to be done.
That's what I've been hearing a lot, is the people who are working, they're working. I mean, they're working long hours, and they're just, you know, seeing that there's some people who aren't, they're working, but they're not working the same type of work. And so anyway, but I don't want to get into that today, because we wanted to find out what exactly the study is. And when we got just a couple more minutes here, I'm noticing on my Zoom notification here. But what is the next survey period if somebody is down in your district and they want to be a part of the study and they want to let their voice be heard? Because you guys, I don't know if you do much censoring. I mean, I've seen some pretty interesting things on those comments. Well, when is the periods, and give us the hoo-ha or whatever.
Sure. So the next survey period will be September 14th to the 22nd, and then we release on the 28th. Just like Jason mentioned, we do publish, if you let us publish your anonymous comment, we do publish it. And just like Jason mentioned, I think, what's the right word? It's good to be transparent. And so we do publish these comments. And just like Jason mentioned, it is worth taking a look at. If you'd like to sign up for the survey and you're an executive in our district, definitely, you know, come down to the DallasFed.org website, go to the energy survey, and on the right, you can sign up, or you can reach out to me. Again, my name is Kunal Patel. My email address and phone number is on our public website. We'd love to have you on our survey. We do have a wide readership. It is widely quoted, but I think it mainly provides input to whether you're in government, whether you're a banker, whether you're in the industry. This provides input on the health and the challenges in the oil and gas space, specifically the upstream space.
Not to bring light to the comments again, but they do actually give some good context to the dry, you know, analytical information that mathematics brings. That's one of the things that's so great about your survey, is that you do bring the charts and the graphs and the dry analytical information that a lot of people need. But there are people like me who like to look at the economic indicators and take a look at what people's energy and thoughts are, because that speaks just as much to the other stuff for those people who want to intuitively try to figure things out. And that's one of the things that this study does bring in. So, Kunal Patel, thank you much. Anything in closing here, as we got about a minute left on our Zoom line?
I would just mention, I think that you're bringing up the data specifically, and I think that another product that we have is called the Energy Slideshow. You can search it through our website or through Google, just search Energy Slideshow Dallas Fed. I think it what it does is it does a great job of providing an executive style presentation, which goes through specifically the data points for many or all of the key indicators that many, many professionals like to look at. And I always recommend to check it out.